Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Good afternoon. Here we are. It is Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem, and along with me, Stephanie Kay, the voice that you've been hearing on this broadcast for a couple of years anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Good afternoon, Stephanie.
Good afternoon. What's it like already? First seconds in, Neil. What's it like?
Yeah. Can we bring up the theme music and just kind of let that play out for another minute or two, kind of get my sea legs here? So,
no.
Well, I sat in with you this morning, so thank you for sitting in with me this afternoon.
Well,
so,
just as I said of you this morning, I got your back. If you freak
thank
out,
you.
If you run out with your papers, throwing them in the air, and I just want you to know I'm here.
You
that's
know,
never
going to
happen. But.
With Bob Mueller, that is a good possibility, probably. I mean, we could.
Bob's a pro.
He is. And we can just pretty much let Bob take the show. And, of course, he has experience having done radio for a number of years and even TV. And we're going to jump in and talk with Bob in just a moment. But this is Connecting Faith, and we have done a little adjustment on our host schedule, program schedule is pretty much the same, but Stephanie, you and Ted are now co-hosting mornings.
Mm-hmm. Wow, what a morning we had. And opened up the phone lines and got to talk to some of you, our listeners, and really had a fun time talking about how to solve our people problems. Great morning.
Yes,
really was.
Well, it may be that you have some people problems as it relates to a marriage relationship, and hopefully today will be some encouragement for you. And one of the reasons we wanted to visit with Dr. Bob Mueller, who we've had on in the past and looking forward to chatting with him again, is that he'll be doing a seminar coming up this weekend for better, for worse, for keeps, and we'll tell you a little bit more about that. Also, we do have a pair of registrations for that we'll be able to give away. So particularly if you're in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area or willing to drive a little bit, because this would be something that would be a great encouragement to you, make sure that you let Derek know when you call in. And to make sure you get registered for that, and we'll do that drawing here at the end of the hour. So I'm Neil, and Matt Reynolds sitting in as the producer.
And just a note on those tickets, they will be at the door for the person who wins. So when we contact them, they can just give their name there, and they should be able to get them that way.
Okay. So if you just if there's a mad rush to the door, and you just, I can sit. No, they were me. I won, really. So Bob and Cheryl can have one of their first sessions just kind of solving marital problems there right at the registration table. So very good.
It's a great place to start.
All right. Well, let's get started. Here we are. Dr. Bob Mueller is on the line with us. And Bob is a pastor who cares deeply about marriages and helping couples connect their hearts for a lifetime. Bob and Cheryl are co-founders of For Better, For Worse, For Keeps Ministries. And they had for a long time a radio program called For Better, For Worse, For Keeps, written several books, including The Marriage Miracle, Keep Courting, 100 Ways to Keep Courting After Marriage, For Better, For Worse, For Keeps. And one of the things I guess we could mention is that they have several children and their first grandbaby, Bob, is that right, 4-month-old?
We'll spend the rest of the hour talking about that.
How well,
about
I have that? I have almost an 8-month-old grandbaby, so so I'm pretty interested in hearing your stories, as I'm sure that you're interested in hearing mine.
Right, so. Exactly. And I've got some wallet-sized pictures too.
This will be wonderful.
Interested in? Yeah, actually, yes. We have our first grandson, Benjamin Briggs. He was born in England, where my daughter lives with her husband, and he's about 4 months old, and they're currently visiting us. And I always said I would not go on and on and on as a grandparent, and yet I'm wearing a button with a picture of him, and it's a plea for help.
Okay?
Please help me. I'm slipping. I'm not able to control this. I really do love the little guy, and we're very happy, very, very pleased. And we have another son getting married in June, and so God is increasing our family. We're so thankful.
Well, Bob, it's always good to visit with you and looking forward to spending a little time today talking and opening up phone lines and taking listener calls. We just talk about marriage and relationships, some of those things. But, hey, Bob, I want to start, I guess, first of all, talking a little bit about, what's happening with the attitude about marriage in our country, because it does seem like, it's at least traditional marriage is not getting a lot of positive press these days.
You know something, when Neil, you'll remember back in the 70s, I think probably a lot of people felt, particularly in the church, that the greatest threat to marriage was the rising divorce rates with the no-fault divorce and other things that skyrocketed. divorce rates. I no longer think that divorce is the greatest threat to the institution of marriage. I think it is the fact that people today are simply skipping it. And it's just simply, and they're moving right to cohabitation. They're moving to establishing parenthood apart from marriage. And in Europe, there's some very, very, you know, disturbing statistics. In the Scandinavian countries, in some place, a 20% marriage rate or less. Some have said maybe 5, 6%. And what I see happening in the United States is very troubling as well. As the number of out-of-wedlock births are growing steadily each year, and now statistics tell us 2 out of 3 couples do cohabitate prior to marriage, and in many cases that's the end of the relationship. It doesn't actually progress to marriage. And so I think the attitude is becoming, well, you know, why marriage at all? You know, why even get married? We can establish a home. We can pool our resources. We can start a family. We can form a common identity. Why do we even need marriage? And as we've read in the news, and as you know, you report daily, the attempts to redefine the meaning of marriage are only accelerating that. My own theory on this is once marriage is defined to mean just about anything, it will mean nothing. And the end result will be that marriage as an institution will, among the larger secular societies, simply follow the same decline and possibly disappear altogether as it appears to be doing in some European countries.
Bob, as a just from a pragmatic standpoint, people probably have a reasonable argument. Say, well, why do we need marriage? What's the response to that?
Well, there's several responses to it, but as believers, our main response is because God ordained marriage as the relationship that he designed for a man and a woman to live together for a lifetime in a covenant relationship and to bear children, and that it's God's plan is the simple answer as believers. Now, I know that may not impress the larger society, so what? You think that's God's plan. I could care less. I have my own plan. But when you start drilling down into the research, you're discovering that the impact of people living together without a marriage covenant has a deleterious, it has a negative impact on, say, children who grow up without the stability of two people committed for a lifetime. In fact, in the Scandinavian countries, they're discovering, yes, the divorce rates have dropped because the marriage simply doesn't take place. There aren't as many people to divorce. But the impact of two people living together without marriage, and you can go to the Heritage Foundation if you want the actual data, shows that it's going to impact children in a very negative fashion. And that they're going to, it's going to be a predictor of a number of issues in their lives, particularly as people come and go out of their lives representing, you know, different stages of their parents' relationships. Another problem is most with living together, when there is no promises really being made, there's none to be broken. And I deal all the time with people who are really devastated by the fact that, you know, they lived with someone for a significant period of time, and then that person just left. You know, they just simply walked away from that relationship. There is nothing like marriage except marriage. Two people living together, engaging in, you know, intimate relationships with each other, sharing, it's still not marriage. It is not a covenant. It is not a promise. It is not a vow. And it is the vows and the commitments and the covenant that we enter into that gives marriage its power, its dignity, its ability to bless our lives, its ability to yield good things, and that the blessing of God is on that. So, I mean, people have tried all sorts of other arrangements, but in the end, they simply do not yield the same spiritual, emotional, even physical benefits, financial benefits and other things, the two people committing themselves to marriage for a lifetime, that yields. And maybe, Neil and Stephanie, the most important thing to be said is this, and it comes back to our faith. The Bible says that marriage, the mystery of marriage, is a picture of Christ in the church. And that Christ to say that living together without marriage is fine is to distort the image of Christ in the church. That he would be in an intimate relationship with his church without commitment, that's just a distortion of that. And that all of the other things we're trying obscure the picture of Jesus and his bride. And as believers, we, by entering into marriage and allowing God to live his life through us, we are holding up before the world Christ and the church. And it is, I believe, ultimately the reason that he created it, is so he could show the world, this is how much Jesus loves us. This is how much we're to honor and revere and love him. And all the other arrangements and all the other ways we're tapering with this obscure that model and that metaphor, and it ends up becoming false doctrine.
It's interesting that, you know, in the old marriage vows, it was, you know, as long as we both shall live, as opposed to now it seems as long as we both shall love. You're talking about, you know, commitment. I haven't heard you really use the word love so much, Bob.
Well, you know something that that Jesus said, if you love me, you'll obey my commandments. And there is, you know, at the essence of loving God is a willingness to be obedient to him. And yes, marriage is to be built on a foundation, obviously, of love. But it is the promises and the vows we make that give it its strength, that create something more than what our feelings from day to day as they may turn out. I put it this way: how many of you would be going to work tomorrow and next week and next month if you only woke up and felt like it? How many of you would continue to pay your mortgages just as long as the emotions were there? And just as long as you enjoyed it? How many of you would finish school if you only took the classes you felt good about and took the finals only if you were really, you know, there emotionally? The truth is, everything of value in life that is worth having, you sacrifice for and you pursue and you stay with, regardless of your mood swings and your emotions from day to day. And how true is that in marriage? There are days you feel like being married. There are days you don't feel like being married. But one of the real blessings of marriage is that when you stay with your vows, if you keep them, they'll keep you. And just a few weeks ago, if we can circle back to a grandchild story, if you'll forgive me, Cheryl and I were at the airport. We had not seen our grandchild. He had been born 3 months earlier in England. And the two of us sat there. It was one of those nights where all the other five kids were somewhere else in our life. And it was just us. And we looked at each other and said, do you know we've lived long enough to see our children's children? And the Bible says that that's a blessing of God when you see your children's children. And it was like for that 20 minutes we waited for them to emerge in Chicago from the international airport, from customs. It's like we relived three decades. And it was the promises we made, the storms we lived through, the joys that we shared together, it all brought us to this point where in a few minutes we'd look upon another human being that was actually the product of our commitment and the product of our faithfulness to one another. And I'm telling you, Neil, it was a spiritual moment. It wasn't just the proud grandparents thinking, oh. You know, it was a moment in which I realized that staying with each other and in better and for better and for worse, in richer and poor, in sickness and in health, it brought us to a point of reward, a milestone, which only commitment and longevity of that nature can truly yield to you. And so there are good things that come with following God's design and staying with it even at days when perhaps you don't feel like it.
It's Dr. Bob Moeller is our guest today, talking about marriage for better, for worse, for keeps. And we're going to talk more with Bob and open up our phone lines. I'd love to have you join our conversation. We have some relationship questions or just some concerns. I would like to just add in your comments. You're always welcome here on Connecting Faith. It's 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. Press 1 to connect with us. Derek's the call screener. And Stephanie, I know you do lots of connections on Facebook, and so we want to do that as well, right? So
absolutely.
People can contact us, Connecting Faith with Neil Stavem. Find it on Facebook. And ask your questions that way as well. We'd just love to have you connect with us.
Just so you know, the photograph on there is not currently Neil. That is not Neil.
Okay.
Neil's a great-looking man, but not that good-looking.
Okay, that's okay.
That's me.
That's good. Appreciate that clarification. So we're going to come back, talk some more marriage today, and Dr. Bob Moeller is our guest, and I encourage you to give us a call, and we'll start taking your calls here shortly at 877-933-2484. Looking forward to hearing from you, 877-93-FAITH.
Go together like a horse and carriage, this I tell you, brother. You can't have one without the other.
Dr. Bob Moeller is on with us today here on Connecting Faith. We're talking about love and marriage, and about the commitment, about marriage for better, for worse, for keeps. Bob and Cheryl will be offering a seminar coming up this weekend that will provide some practical tools, some help, and we'll give you more information about that. But Bob, the song remind me that, you know, there's some people say, you know, well, we're married in our heart. Do we really need a ring, a marriage certificate, a piece of paper? And does the state really need to be involved in that? Because that sort of brings up the whole issue of alternative marriages.
Right. Well, obviously that just simply to be married in your heart means what? The very first miracle that Jesus ever performed in his public ministry was at a marriage. It was at a wedding in Cana of Galilee, in which he was invited along with his disciples. Some think it was actually the Apostle John's marriage, that there's some reason to think that John was writing somewhat autobiographically about his own experience, and Nazareth was right next to Cana, and so the towns were literally almost touching one another. So it's very interesting if that would be the case, but Jesus came, and it's the first place he revealed his glory, it says. As he thus revealed his glory, and his disciples put their faith in him. It was at a wedding. Now, is that random? Was that just because other places were booked and no venues available? Or was it because God was trying again to say that marriage is this all-important metaphor? History begins with a marriage in the Garden of Eden with Adam and Eve. History ends with a marriage with the bride coming from heaven, beautifully adorned for her husband, and the marriage supper of the Lamb. You know, for people to say I'm married in my heart would be, you know, maybe somewhat like saying, well, you know, I bought this house in my heart. I've purchased this car. In my heart, I'm an employee or I'm a citizen of this country. Well, it's great that if you have the spirit of something, but also there's a necessary element in life of publicly, definitively declaring your vows to one another. I teach in my marriage seminar, Neil and Stephanie, that finding your spouse is a lot like coming to Jesus, and that there's an awareness that he develops in our heart and a conviction that we should meet this person, and then there is even this moment of invitation where you propose, and then there is commitment. And it's very interesting that if that parallel holds out, think of baptism as a public declaration of your vows, and that it's meant for the world to know I'm a follower of Christ. In many ways, the wedding ceremony is a public declaration that I am committed to, that I am been joined with and to this person, and I want everybody to know it. And so I think there is a legitimate place to ask and to insist for an actual wedding that is publicly witnessed, that has the sanction of both the church, and I think because marriage has such an important role in the state, I think it has a legitimate role in recognizing that as well. You can't find anywhere in either the Old or New Testament people who were just married in their hearts. That didn't exist. People got married in public. The celebration would go on sometimes a week or even more. But the whole idea was we are publicly declaring today our commitment and our vows to one another. And just simply to go around and say, well, in my heart, that's the way we feel about each other, is simply not adequate.
We want to invite your calls, your questions, your interaction with us at 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. I'm thinking, Stephanie, and maybe people listening today who say, you know, my kids have decided to live together outside of marriage, or, you know, I'm just wondering about maybe some challenges in my relationship. How do I deal with that? You know, we invite your calls to, you know, I think – you know, that's always the challenge maybe for parents to say, you know, my kids are making choices that I wish they wouldn't make. And we see it so frequently.
It's so hard. And, you know, it's a hard thing to talk about, even if you're in this situation. But you can, you know, you can always call anonymously. And if there's anybody who just has the depth of insight, I know our good friend Bob Moeller does. The number is 1-877-93-FAITH, 877-93-FAITH. And Bob, you said something, Neil, if I could just a second, because you said something that really changed the way I look at the nature of this, Bob, in a show we did a while back. And you said something about God just isn't going to bless sin. So even as Christians are talking about, I'm married in my heart, and yet we have this problem where God just can't bless sin. How are people navigating these two things?
Well, there's at least 12 unintended consequences of sexual behavior, premarital sex, living together, that are going to enter into a relationship. And it's part of God's universe, moral universe that he's created. And there's going to be distrust. There's going to be a lack of communication. There's going to be a sense, in some cases, of shame. There's going to be a number of things, a loss of intimacy. All these things happen, and you don't have to have someone condemning or someone interfering. These are going to happen all on their own because God cannot and will not and does not bless sin. He, when he talked with the woman at the well in the Gospel of John, at the end of his conversation, he said, "Go call your husband." And she said, "Well, I have no husband." And he said, "You're quite right. You've had five husbands, and the man you are with now is not your husband." And at that point, she went into the village and said, "I want everybody to come meet this man who's told me everything that I've ever done." And not in the sense like he's lifted me up for ridicule, but yet in his loving, incisive way, he's reached out to me, he's cared about me, but he's also pointed out what's wrong in my life. And I need to address that, and I need to do something about that. Jesus didn't say, "Well, you've had five husbands. I can understand why you just want to live with someone and not bother with that again, and that's fine." That's not what he says to her. And again, because it mars the image of Jesus and the church, that he would be intimate with his church without commitment. That's just simply a false idea, and that's what living together communicates.
By the way, Dr. Bob Moeller will be in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area coming up Saturday the 12th for a seminar for everyone, married, separated, dating, and a strong marriage will be encouraged. It's at Westwood Community Church. We have a pair of registrations that we can give away for that, and would love to offer that to you. If you're able to go to that here this weekend, would like to be in on that, make sure you let Derek, our call screener, know when you call. We'll put you in the drawing for that. We've got a couple of calls we're going to get to here right after our break. But, Bob, just to take a minute to talk a little bit about just the seminar, the kinds of things that you'd be talking about.
Well, we're going to be talking on Saturday about the unique differences between men and women to begin with. And particularly, I like to share with couples, for example, a man's need for companionship, and that God created him not to be alone, and how a woman can become more than just somebody who's, you know, a wife who's there, but truly his companion, and how much men who are so lonely on average in life need that. We're going to talk about the importance of knowing your heart condition. There's 12 different types of hardened hearts that we can develop toward one another, and that blocks our ability to give and receive love. We're going to talk about 7 secrets to a great sex life, and we're going to talk about how to remain intimate and soften your heart toward one another for a lifetime. Jesus said Moses permitted you to divorce because your hearts were hard. Well, if a hard heart is what separates a couple, 2 soft hearts is what will bring them back together. And we found in our ministry that when couples soften their hearts, it's only a matter of when they will reconcile, not if they reconcile. And so we're going to talk about maintaining that heart that's open, that heart that's accepting, that soft heart toward each other for a lifetime.
I'm Bob Moeller, Dr. Bob Moeller, for Better, for Worse, for Keeps. And seminars coming up Saturday at Westwood Community Church in the suburban Twin Cities area. And we'll have links on our website as well. You can get more information on that. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more with Bob Moeller here in a couple minutes. You're listening to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem. Nice to be along with you, and it's something that we'll be doing regularly now. Stephanie Kay is also with me today. We're just kind of getting adjusted here in the transition. Thanks for sitting in, Stephanie.
Great. You know what? This is the best show for me to sit in on because I'm just such a big fan of Bob Moeller, yeah. and I'm so excited, Dr. Moeller. Well, I like to call you Bob. Is that okay?
Yeah, please.
Okay,
yeah.
Bob. I'm so glad that you're coming into town.
Yeah.
I really love to just be able to kind of take in your conference, too.
Well, thank you. I would love to have you and anyone else listening to be part of it. And,
sure.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to allow Cheryl and I to share our heart on this subject.
Well, it's an important subject, and let's take some calls because folks have questions. We're talking today about marriage for better, for worse, for keeps. Dr. Bob Moeller is on with us, and we'll go to our phone lines. It's 877-93-FAITH. That's the number to call, 877-933-2484. Press 1, you connect with us on the show. And if you're able to be eligible in the drawing, or if you are interested in coming to the conference this weekend, the seminar this weekend at the Westwood Community Church in the suburban Minneapolis, you can just let the call screener know when you call. But let's go to Tom on line 2. Tom, go ahead with your call for Dr. Moeller.
Well, hello, good afternoon. I'm just wondering, I've got a spouse that left about 2 years ago, and I'm just wondering, you know, when a person decides to separate after 26 years of marriage, what kind of recourse do I have? Because then the vows really, what did the vows mean? And that's kind of like the foundation for a marriage.
Hey, if you could repeat that, I'm sorry.
Sure.
It went blank.
Okay, I will.
So if he... Take one more quick run
sure.
at it.
His wife left him, Tom, did you say, 26 years ago?
Yeah. 26.
Or after 26 years of marriage.
Yeah.
And so I guess his question is then, you know, what's the significance of the vows? Do they mean anything as a result of what he's experienced?
Well, you know, we can't keep other people's promises. We can only keep our own. We can't make other people be faithful to what they promised, but... Listen, I believe you being faithful to the promises you made is something that God will bless and something that God does reward. You know, I was one of the people that I studied under years ago said this, that if most people who get divorced would wait 3 years to remarry, they'd remarry the same person. They'd go back. Because so often they discover, even after leaving, and the grass looks greener somewhere else, they discover it's really astroturf, and it's not what they thought it was going to be, and it's not at all satisfying. And then they realize how much they have invested and how much they've lost by walking away from that marriage. You can't stop someone else from leaving you. You can't stop someone else from divorcing you. But I do believe that we ourselves can remain committed you know, to keeping our vows until the person literally says this marriage is done and the judge says it's over and you're gone and whatever. But I think that kind of faithfulness and that kind of commitment, God sees and God knows and God rewards. And I would just encourage you that even though the marriage may appear to be over, may even be legally over, part of our ministry every week is working with couples, sometimes separated, even divorced, who decide that, you know, something, we want to see if we can put this back together. And we work with them to discover what sin and what pain may have damaged their hearts that kept them from being able to really have the marriage that they wanted. And so often, thankfully, we've seen miracles where people have even come back together. So don't give up. I mean, I don't know your circumstance entirely, so I can't speak to it. But all I know is that God is a God who keeps his word, And when you keep your word and you keep your promises, God is, his blessing is going to be over your life. Even if the marriage is not restored, I believe that someday when we stand before the Lord, you yourself will receive a great reward for remaining faithful to what you promised.
Bob, we've heard that, and thanks, Tom, for your call. We've heard that before, that, you know, within 3 to 5 years or so, that most would say, you know, I would have stuck it out if I'd sort of known. What's your word to some of those that are maybe in that situation, saying, you know, I can't go another day?
Well, sometimes, Neil, a separation can actually be a good thing if it's for the purpose of working on your marriage. If it's for the purpose of getting the help and the intervention that you need, sometimes that time apart can be very productive and very valuable. I don't believe in separation as trial divorce. You know, let's see how it would be, how we both feel. But rather, I see it as a time for both of you to be able to pursue the issues in your life that you need to pursue. Obviously, in some marriages, there's a guilty party, there's an innocent party. But one of the things we say in our ministry is no matter how thin the pancake, it always has two sides. And that in every situation, there are issues I can work on in my own life and that I can resolve and that I could be a different person. And when people quit trying to change each other and begin to work on the issues they need to in their own lives, that's when real change seems to take place. And so before you rush into another relationship, or before you rush into another marriage, and people are tempted to do that, I would say, please stop. Please examine the lessons of this. Please see what God would want to do in your heart, where he might want to bring about changes in your life. And again, we found that as people wait and take time to do this, often they discover that they really do want to be reconciled to the person that they're no longer married to or they're separated from. So separation can have value if it's for the right purposes.
20 minutes before 1 o'clock, Dr. Bob Mueller is our guest today here on Connecting Faith, talking marriage, relationships. I want to go to Mark, listening on Faith 90.5 in Duluth. Mark, thanks for your call today. Go ahead with Dr. Mueller.
Thank you, Neil and Stephanie. Hi, Bob.
Good afternoon.
My question is relating to about 4 years ago, my wife and I separated physically, house-wise, I guess, for about a year. And then after that year was up, we counseled throughout that year. She decided that she wanted to get a divorce, and she did get the divorce 3 years ago now, it's been. Since then, she filed for what's called an annulment to say that the marriage never even occurred, and she was granted the annulment about a month ago. And that's a denomination that reviews the marriage through a tribunal process, says that the marriage did not occur, for they interview people in your history, parents, siblings, whoever you might want to submit as being a witness to the marriage, annulled it, said it never occurred. But regardless of whether we have children, which we do have four, I just got an announcement to say that the marriage did not ever occur. Last May, she did get remarried, so I guess in a certain regard, I'm not on the hook. But I'd like your opinion, Dr. Mueller, regarding annulment and saying that the marriage never even occurred.
All right. Thanks, Mark, for your call.
Thank you, Mark. Well, this is a point in which we have a difference of opinion, a strong one doctrinally with those that teach annulment. You know, the Bible says that a man shall leave his father and mother, be united to his wife, and become one flesh. When that occurs, that's a marriage. And when those public vows are exchanged and the marriage is consummated, that is marriage. And it did happen, and it did occur. And so I know there are reasons and some elaborate, justifications for this, but I just don't see annulment being practiced in either the Old or New Testament. Divorce certainly occurred, and separation can certainly occur. But the annulment is not a model that you saw working in or practiced among the early church. Rather, that marriage did occur. You have four children, among other things, and a wedding certificate to prove that it did. And I believe in the eyes of God, you were one and you were married. And the Bible's pretty strong in its condemnation of those who treat vows and relationships in a way that is not sacred, a way that is not held up in honor. In Hebrews it says, let the marriage, bed be kept pure. It is to be esteemed. It is a holy estate that Christ adorned as the wedding vow, say, with his presence at a wedding in Cana of Galilee. So really what you have, and I don't know the circumstances of why your wife divorced and what the grounds were, whatever, but certainly to say that it never existed, I don't believe that's true biblically, and I don't believe that's true in God's eyes. I think rather there was a marriage there, that the two of you were one, and Jesus went so far as to say that if you divorce for unbiblical reasons, you become an adulterer when you remarry, if there is not the basis, because one was unfaithful, for example, to the other. That you really have a case where someone can say it doesn't exist and I'm remarrying, but Jesus looks at that according, Matthew, you can look at that, in chapter 19, and he says it's adultery, what occurs after that. It's a strong word, but that is what the scriptures say, and that's where it stands written, and that's where I stand.
All right, Bob, let's take another call from Leslie, who's listening in on Faith 1190, WNWC. We're talking a little bit earlier about, parents with kids that are making choices. Leslie, tell us a little bit about your story and your question.
Hi, thanks for having me. We have a son. We love him. He's a great guy, and he's graduated from college, had a girlfriend for a few years, living out of town, and his apartment comes up, his rent comes up in August, and his girlfriend purchased a home that together, they aren't living together, but they're fixing it up together, doing a lot of work together. And I had a question. My husband and I were, we've been having, many conversations about this, actually, and about what's he going to do. Is he going to get another apartment for a lease for a year? And he was so hesitant, and he was like, well, Mom, I'm not really sure what I'm going to do. I have a bunch of people that said that I could live with them. And I said, Critter, why don't you just sign a lease again for another year? And then I'm not trying to pressure him into marrying his girlfriend or anything like that. I think that they will get married. He mentioned it to my mom that they had planned on being married when they're ready, when she passed away a couple months ago. So I know it's in his thought process, but I don't know if it's a fear, but my thought process is that I think he's going to probably want to live with her when they get this house finished. And when I mentioned it to him, he was like, well, Mom, how about if we're engaged? Would that be wrong? And my opinion was, yeah, Chris, I shouldn't say his name, yeah, that's not honoring yourself. It's not honoring your girlfriend. It's not honoring God. But I guess my question to you is, as a parent, what point do I push that?
Right.
Desire of my heart.
Bob, let me just ask here. Thank you, Leslie, for your call. I invite you to maybe just hang up and listen. We're going to take a short 60-second break just to get that taken care of. And then when we come back, Bob, you can respond, because I think that's a question that many of us parents have, is that, how do we encourage our adult kids to make wise choices, and what's the rationale? And let's review that in 60 seconds here with Bob Moeller here on Connecting Faith. 877-93-FAITH is the number. You're listening to Connecting Faith. Glad to have you tuned in. I'm Neil Stavem. Looking forward to spending some time with you together each weekday here, noon to 1, on the Faith Radio Network. 877-93-FAITH is our phone number. Bob Moeller, Dr. Bob Moeller, is on with us, founder of the Marriage Ministry for Better, for Worse, for Keeps. We took a call here just a few minutes ago. A mom says, how do I tell my adult children and give them a good argument for not living together, and even when they're going to be engaged? Bob, what do we say?
Well, one of the Greek words for premarital involvement is defrauding. And defrauding essentially means to take something that isn't yours. And when you are in a relationship with someone and you take advantage of them sexually, you're taking something that isn't yours, not yet. It's not to be yours until you are married. And so ahead of time, what you're really doing, and let me use a strong word for this, you're stealing. You're taking something that is not by right belonging to you. And that's a very shaky way to begin a relationship. Well, what do you say as a parent? That's a good question in this case, because they're adults and they can make their own choices. I want to turn to 1 Thessalonians and read something to you, if I can. It says this. It talks about Paul's visit there. And he says, "And you know that we treated each of you as a father treats his own children. We pleaded with you. We encouraged you. And we urged you to live lives, your lives, in a way that God would consider worthy. For he has called you into his kingdom to share your glory." I think that's such a wonderful definition of fatherhood or being a parent. We plead with you, we encourage you, we urge you to live a life worthy of what God would say is worthy. And I think that's what you need to do with your kids if they're considering moving in. If they were going to invest all their money in some company that promised them a 600% return every month, would you go, "Hold on a second, those are precious assets. You're talking about your hard-earned money. This doesn't sound right. This doesn't sound like it's going to work. Something's wrong with this." Indeed, if you see your kids in any other area of their life heading into a real danger zone, you would plead with them. You'd encourage them. You would urge them to live their lives in a worthy way. And at that point, it's as much as you can do. And at that point, they have to make their own decisions. But that model of saying in love what needs to be said, I think, is what you need to do. You go, "Well, we risk losing the relationship with them." Yes, but Proverbs 24:25 says, if you see someone staggering toward ruin or slaughter and say, "But we knew nothing about this," does not God, who perceives the heart, Scripture says, will he not hold you accountable for that? So I believe, as I do in any other relationship, that to speak the truth in love, to risk that relationship for the sake of their own well-being, is a risk that Scripture encourages to take. Now, I'm not saying be harsh, be mean, be ugly, be threatening, be manipulative. That's not how we're told to confront people. But yet, I will speak the truth in love, not because I don't love them, but because I do. And maybe you'd have to risk sometimes someone misinterpreting or being upset with you. But to not say anything is to consign them to the consequences that Scripture says that you really don't want them to experience.
Well, Bob, in the time remaining, and we'll mention again the seminar coming up this weekend, and if you're able to attend or would like to be in the drawing for that, it's coming up Saturday at Westwood Community Church, the Twin Cities area. We'd be happy to put your name in the drawing for that. And Bob, maybe some warnings or some recommendations. All right, we want a healthy relationship. We want our marriage to be for better, for worse, for keeps. I guess not for worse, but we want to be for keeps. So what are there some warnings, some recommendations kind of on the top of your list?
Well, let me give four things real quickly then to kind of wrap this up. Number one, choose to stay married for the rest of your life. Once the marriage is first and foremost a choice, not an emotion. And we need to choose to do the right thing if we want to see the right things follow. Number two, you need to make this person, your relationship with your spouse, the most important priority in your life after your relationship with Jesus. There is no relationship more important after your relationship with Jesus than that with your spouse. And even your kids want you to know you love each other more than you love them. That gives them security. Number three, act out love to experience love. In other words, if some of the emotions or the tingles have gone away, do what Jesus told the church in Ephesus do, to return to their first love by doing the things you did at first. Begin showing that love, that affirmation. Begin showing that nurture, even if you're not feeling it, and it's going to begin to return. And number four, trust that God has a plan and that that plan works. That ultimately, what I've seen keep so many couples through the deep, darkest storms of their life is they trusted that God had a plan for their marriage. Listen, I can't imagine God pacing the hallways of heaven, rubbing his forehead to the gate, saying, Bob and Cheryl, I never saw it coming. They got married. What am I going to do now? Oh, boy. No, God saw that, and he has a plan. And by the way, if I can take a moment of privilege, today is the anniversary of my asking my wife to marry me. It was 32 years ago today I got down on my knees. She actually thought I had fallen off the couch, but it was just me getting down. And I said, will you marry me? So I want to publicly say some 32 years later, thank you for saying yes. How you changed my life and what a blessed man I am.
And I know, Bob, of course, if you had to get down your knee today, it'd be a little slower getting up, right?
So. Yeah, she'd have to help me,
sure,
probably.
Sure.
You know, what happens is your broad mind and your narrow waist change places.
Well, yeah. In fact, as you said, she'd have to help you. That really is the key, though, of a relationship, isn't it? It's about helping one another.
It certainly is. It certainly is. So, yeah, those are the four things I would say to keep love alive. Choose to stay married. Make this your priority in life. Act out love to experience it and trust that God has a plan, because he certainly does.
What does it mean to make marriage your most important priority? What does that look like practically?
Well, it means you love your spouse more than your work. You love your spouse more than Facebook. You love your spouse more than your career. You love your spouse more than your family of origin, more than your kids. It means that you give them your first and your best rather than your leftovers. It means that each and every day you attempt to make some type of connection emotionally and spiritually toward one another. That you decide that, you know, jobs come and go and money comes and goes, but this is the person that's going to go with me to the nursing home. This is the person that's going to hold my hand when the graphs all point downward on the machines and say life is ebbing away. I always say, who should you give your best to? To the person that's going to walk you to the door of eternity. And as God has arranged it, that's your spouse. Either you with her or her with you. And they deserve your best.
Bob, give us your web address. People want to find out more about the ministry and your
yeah,
books and resources.
Yeah, if they'd like to get resources from us or see what we're going to be doing next, it's forkeepsministries.com. Forkeepsministries, all one word, .com. We have DVDs, CDs, books available to try and encourage you in your marriage, and some free stuff called a personal heart exam to see how your heart is doing, whether it's hard or soft toward your spouse. That you can download for free.
Forkeepsministries.com. Dr. Bob Moeller, along with his wife, Cheryl, co-founders of For Better, For Worse, For Keeps Ministry, and he'll be in Minneapolis-St. Paul area coming up this weekend, Saturday the 14th, at Westwood Community Church. And there's a seminar there happening that Bob will be leading, and there's an opportunity for you to be a part of that. And we'll do a drawing from those that are called in today, and hopefully somebody can benefit from that. And if you're didn't win that registration, we're certainly encouraging you to check that out. Bob, always good to visit with you. Thanks so much for taking some time with us today.
Oh, thank you, Neil. Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you.
Bob Moeller on the line with us today for Marriage for Worse for Keeps, For Better, For Worse for Keeps, The Marriage Miracle, one of his latest books. You can check that out. And again, we'll let you know our winners here tomorrow on who will be getting that registration. And tomorrow on the broadcast, I encourage you to be listening in. We're going to talk a little bit about the living out our faith in the marketplace. It seems like there are a number of challenges to that these days. You know, a lot of legal issues keeping us sort of maybe pushing the corner or saying, you know, this really isn't something for public consumption. So should we be concerned about those cases where faith seems to be pushed away? Alliance Defense Fund Senior Counsel Jordan Lawrence will join us. We talk about some of the current court cases could have impact on the way we live and practice our faith, and we'd love to have you join our conversation as well. That's on tomorrow's Connecting Faith. I almost said New Day, but it is a new day.
It's a new day.
It's a new, yes.
And
so,
if you missed any of this portion of the interview with Bob Moeller, please go back and podcast it on the website at faithradionet.com. So valuable. Such wisdom and insight by Dr. Bob Moeller always. And you should re-listen.
And you'll be on you and Ted tomorrow morning.
Yes.
So what's happening tomorrow? So.
Dr. Carolyn Lee, so excited about that. How to detoxify negative thought patterns and switch back on our brain, which is really important to do at 6 in the morning.
I was going to say, that sounds like a lot of pressure to me, but I guess, you know, if we can get it on at 6 o'clock, that would be a good thing. That would make the day a little better, probably.
Absolutely.
So, thanks for joining us today. Listen for A New Beginning coming up here in just a few minutes on Faith Radio. This is Connecting Faith.